Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer. And in the studio today, as always, it is Gregor Robertson. And alongside Gregor, it's Tom Clark and Alison Rudd. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
After our recent adventures, Gregor, we had you in Milan. Alison, you were in Madrid. Tom, is there anything that you'd like to tell us about your...
I haven't been anywhere that exotic.
Oh, that's a shame.
I have been to Accrington, though. And I watched the mighty Lincoln City lead three times and then concede a fourth goal in the 95th minute.
Oh.
And I was very, very wet and very, very cold. But I did try out my new waterproof coat and it's very good.
Oh, well. So, there you go. So not as wet as you suggested.
Quite literally every cloud.
Okay, coming up, we're going to have an Erling Haaland love-in, discuss whether we like Diego Simeone's tactics at Atletico Madrid, and we'll see if we can come up with a better excuse than Harry Maguire's natural reaction to straighten his leg into poor Mishi Batshuayi's groin. All that to come after this.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Now, it was a disappointing night for Tottenham as they went down 1-0 at home to RB Leipzig in the first leg of their Champions League last 16 clash. Without the injured Harry Kane and Heung-min Son, they didn't look the same force going forward as they were outplayed by Leipzig, who sealed their advantage with a Timo Werner penalty. And there was a worrying moment for Spurs fans on the hour mark when Dele Alli was taken off. And he wasn't happy about it. He slammed a water bottle to the ground before taking his seat on the bench. And then, well, his poor boots got it. They were flung to the ground. And it's led to a lot of people talking about whether or not his reaction was justified. Gregor, is it okay for a player to react like that?
I think so. But a lot of managers don't. Mm. Also, I mean, his boot bounced pretty high. I think it nearly could have hit a teammate in the face or something. Look, I mean, it shows that he cares. That's the kind of the first answer that you're going to come up with. And it's true. He's obviously disappointed at the way the team's played and possibly the way he's played. But managers don't like any attention to be drawn to a decision that they've made. And I know that from experience. I remember Gary Megson's first game in charge of Nottingham Forest. He played me in midfield. So it's kind of... I'm not going to draw comparisons between me and Dele Alli here, but... we're played out of position. We're both played out of position, that's all I'll say. And I got taken off after about an hour. And I was pretty angry. I went off down the tunnel.
What a diva.
And well, I also had a knock. So
you always knew you had
it. We come to excuses later. I had a knock, so I was getting a bag of ice, one of those things.
Yeah, of course you were.
But then when it came to, I'd been in every squad, every matchday squad for 18 months or something. And it came to the Friday after that, and the team sheet went up, my name wasn't on it. So I went to knock on his door, and he wouldn't even see. His receptionist came back here and said, "No, he's not seeing you." So it was like, clearly he wasn't happy by that.
What, didn't he ever explain?
Well, I tried to see him for about a week after that, and he basically refused to. He said the only time he would see any players was on a Monday, and there was often quite a long queue with Gary Megson.
Right.
So, no, he never really explained it to me. He explained it to the players in a team meeting afterwards.
So that's how you found out?
Yeah, through the lads. So it was, you know, I think that was a bit underhand. But anyway, the point is, managers do not like any attention drawn to a decision they've made because they feel it's for the best interest of the team.
And I'm sure most players would know that. But Dele Alli, for whatever reason, decided to vent his frustration. Alison, does that show good character in some ways about Alli, do you think? The fact that he may well be annoyed by either his performance or the fact that he's been taken off because he doesn't want to come off?
I've got a thing against players who sit and scowl for that long. really. If he's got good character, that would mean he would bury the disappointment and be just trying to give off a good vibe. Let's, you know, exude confidence from the bench. I know it's a tiny, tiny thing and the players don't see the shots that you see at home on the telly. And I know the opposition aren't looking at him, but you've got to believe, you know, in the whole holistic thing, that a player on the Spurs bench looking quite that cross with life isn't a... It can only be negative.
Mm.
And it does... I think it smacks slightly of a subconscious player power, because every player, certainly of the type of Dele Alli, they know they'll be at the club longer, or if they want to be, they can be at the club longer than any manager. That, you know, any impact from him having a poor game or a good game or being cross about it or visibly cross about it will ultimately lead to Mourinho's exit, not his. So if you just to answer you completely narrowly on the question of character, then no, because a good character would be aware of all that and think, tonight, with the depleted team we've got, being part of making the whole greater than it probably is, he should be acting in an encouraging manner. After, an initial disappointment. We all accept that. No one wants to see a player happy to come off. That would be weird. But no, it was just a bit self-centred, probably.
Tom, which sort of the side of the fence are you on? Are you on the, maybe it was a petulant reaction from Dele Alli, or actually it's a reaction of showing he cares?
Well, I'll never get away with it if I'm not completely honest, because anyone who's played six-a-side with me will know that I've done far worse than throw my boots on the floor.
What have you done?
You're not allowed to swear, are you, on the podcast? Producer Max is shaking his head. I think, to take up Gregor's point about managers not liking it, I'm not so sure about that one in this case. I think Jose Mourinho actually loves it. There's a whole little kind of soap opera happening on the Tottenham touchline this season. It started when he took over with the ball boy who, you know, got an assist and everything's all happy and everything's great. And then you've got, you know, the VAR incident at Man City when they're laughing and joking and then trying to get Raheem Sterling sent off. Then you've got Jan Vertonghen sat on the bench thinking, is my career over? And now you've got Dele Alli. All we ever talk about is whatever happens on the Tottenham bench. No one's talking about what's happening on the pitch.
That's
which,
why he likes
which
it,
isn't
perhaps.
Great, which actually maybe does Mourinho a massive favour, because last night, you know, not the most inspired tactics, you know, slightly narrow-minded. Any Tottenham fan that I know isn't particularly impressed with what's happening on the pitch. And here we are talking about Dele Alli throwing boots around off the pitch.
But to counter that, Mourinho has erroneously, but he's decided to go down this path. He has praised Tottenham getting results because they are a family.
That's just nonsense, isn't it?
Well, this proves it.
I mean,
I don't think he'd be very happy about that narrative being quite evidently inaccurate.
No, but I think he's kind of, you know, it's just that, you know, it's strange to me how that is what we're talking about. Even when it was good and they had a few good results, it was still him and his ball boy mate on the touchline, and it's all about what's going on off the pitch. So I don't necessarily agree that, I think he probably does like it because it's helping create a narrative around players and things, which is helping when he says comments about Tanguy Ndombele, who's one of their better players, or potentially better players, big summer signing, who he can't seem to get the best out of, doesn't know how to use him, has already made hints about, you know, his form and fitness and things. It's a good distraction for Mourinho, I would say.
Do we think then there are signs of fractures in the Spurs camp? When you mention what he said about Ndombele, now he's mentioned Dele Alli. Okay, he was asked the question, but the way he responded was, well, Dele is just annoyed at himself. When he first got the job, or when he was axed from Manchester United, he did say that he would take time out and try and reassess himself and be a different manager, but it doesn't really seem like he is any different. He's going back to being the same old Jose that is very critical of his players.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it shows that there's a fracture. I think it shows that, certainly it showed in Dele Alli's performance that he did not feel comfortable playing that way. He was chasing shadows for almost his entire time on the pitch. And the way that it didn't look, Tottenham as a team didn't look comfortable playing that way either. So kind of conservatively and sitting back and ceding possession, which is such a contrast to what they've been doing for the past 5 years or so. So I think if there's any likely to be any sort of disharmony in the camp, it'll be over that rather than, and I don't think this was that kind of being manifested. I just think that if there is going to be any sort of disharmony, it'll likely be because it's not easy anymore to get a team to play so kind of conservatively and defensive-mindedly. You know, we're going to come on and talk about Atletico. That's part of why it's so amazing what they do, is because it's so hard nowadays. Almost every player in modern football, they want to have the ball and pass it and play sort of progressive football, and that is not what Jose Mourinho is doing.
Well, let's discuss Liverpool's first leg defeat to Atletico Madrid on Tuesday night. I mentioned at the start of the pod that, Alison, you were in Madrid. You were at the Wanda Metropolitano Stadium. Before we talk about the game itself, the atmosphere looked incredible leading up to the game with the scenes outside the stadium. What was it like?
Oh, well, it was. I came out of the metro. My first thought was, I've never seen a sunset like that. And I realised it couldn't be a sunset. And I thought, oh my God, there's a building on fire. I realised it wasn't that. They just set up lots of red flares. And as you came out the tube, so the new stadium's on my right, and on my left, there's a wall, and it looked like a circus act. So you had fan on shoulders and then on their shoulders again, like they were doing some weird balancing act. And they were all silhouetted, so it looked strange. Beautifully strange. And they were all waving scarves and making an intense noise. And this is an hour and a half before kickoff, because they wanted to be there to welcome the Atletico bus as it arrived with the players, so that when they came round the roundabout and saw this scene, they would know that when Simeone had said, I have faith in the fans, that they'd repaid that faith, and they were letting the team know this is going to be a special night, because they hadn't done that. This is a new stadium, mm-hmm. and it's the locals have been critical of, oh, we haven't got the old vibe, it's not intimidating anymore. And so they were determined to give it an extra edge. So it was heaving and packed, and then inside, I first thought, oh, this is overly orchestrated. I mean, the way they release the banners, it's like, you know, like in England, they're sort of carried along by bodies and they go a bit wonky sometimes. And there's always somebody who doesn't quite unfurl the top left-hand corner. And it's, but it was done like it was a theatre production and everything was perfect. So I thought maybe a bit too perfect. But no, once the action started, it was actually ear-piercing, the shrieks when Liverpool were on the ball. And it, you know, and Klopp said afterwards, it must have got to the referee because he didn't referee the game properly. It was definitely intimidating. I don't know why Gregor's laughing. But one very important point to make, because I think we've had a little bit of a go at Gregor and his Prosecco at the Milan Derby. When you arrive at the Wanda, you are given, in a gruff fashion, you are given a little white carrier bag, which contains a tiny bottle of water, an apple, a packet of crisps and a Mankey sandwich.
Don't get any of that at Accrington. Just count yourself lucky.
No, I know that sounds slightly like I need too much from a club, but I don't understand why. If you any Premier League club in the Champions League, the array of food that you get as the visiting... I mean, I'm amazed and I'm embarrassed at the discrepancy. You get every you know, Liverpool give them a massive buffet. Chelsea give you a buffet. Spurs give you a buffet. Big buffet.
Yeah.
I know.
No,
but the ordinary fan.
It's getting Prosecco. You don't know how lucky you were. That is not standard. That is not standard as a member of the British media visiting a European
Did
club.
You get a buffet at the San Siro?
Oh, yeah. Various pasta dishes, some lovely focaccia.
Oh,
it's good, yeah.
Lovely. Well, I think you won this battle of what was on offer. But talking about the game then itself, Atletico struck early through Saul Niguez, and a dogged defensive display helped them seal a 1-0 victory. But Simeone's side have faced some criticism for the manner of their first leg victory due to some of their dirty tricks, shall we say. Andy Robertson hit back at Atletico after the game, accusing their players of falling over and trying to get under our skin, but followed that up with a reminder that the tie is far from over ahead of the return leg at their Anfield Fortress on March the 11th. Now, Atletico have won 12 of their last 13 home matches in Europe, drawing the other game and keeping 11 clean sheets in this run. There was no shortage of theatrics from the Atletico players, with deliberate handballs, pulling of shirts, cynical deliberate fouls perhaps, and diving. And that's all with a 27% possession. Do we care about the actual tactics of Atletico, Tom?
No, I'm a big fan. Big fan.
Why?
Just because I think that's the whole point of sport. You know, Liverpool are the better footballing side. and Atletico have to try and work out a way of beating them. I mean, this isn't unique to Liverpool against Atletico. Sorry to hark back to my mighty Lincoln City, but when we were top of League Two, we were the best team in the league. And, you know, we would occasionally get beat by a team lower down the league who would come and kick and dive and fall over and con the referee into a penalty. And my dad would be sat next to me going mad and going, what's going on? What's, you know, they're just beating you at the basics, the kind of the dirty little tricks, which to me, you have to match the opposition on that before you then impart your, you know, superior talent and footballing ability. And so I think it's great. And I would also just say on the point of possession, to talk about other statistics, 34.9%, that's the possession of Jurgen Klopp's Dortmund side when they faced Real Madrid in the semi-finals of the Champions League in 2013, defending a 4-1 first leg lead. They lost 2-0 and went through to the final. You know, his side was the lesser side in that match, and they did what they needed to do to win. And I thought it was great to see this Liverpool side, which is a brilliant, brilliant team, challenged for once in a different way.
The tactics, I mean, as you say, they nullified Liverpool, and that was the job that they had to do in Madrid. In some ways, Gregor, it's been lauded as a masterclass from Atletico Madrid. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, to see players kind of defending with that fervour is very rare now, I think. I've reminded it's Saul Núñez, and like there was maybe 5 minutes to go, and Trent Alexander-Arnold had the ball in his own corner flag, and he harried and hounded him down to make sure it wasn't going to go out for a goal kick and to stick out for a throw-in instead. Like, just kind of tiny little marginal thing. And that was just, like, emblematic of their sort of approach for the whole game. And you see Simeone in the touchline kind of riling up the fans and the players. And he's, you know, it's, as I said before, I think it's getting harder and harder to get elite professional footballers to play like that, because most of them want to, you know, you got Antoine Griezmann to play in a really defensive minded team. He's one of the best players in the world, and he was willing to do it. I'm not sure whether someone like Mourinho has got that capability anymore, but we'll leave that for now. I have no problem with it. In fact, I enjoyed it. I think if I was a Liverpool fan, I would not have enjoyed it. I would hate it. You know, it's so frustrating if it's your team you're watching playing against them. But for the neutral, to see two teams with such different styles go head-to-head, it's brilliant.
No, and just to be clear, Klopp was critical of the antics and the diving around.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone would say that's good for football. But he did praise Simeone's team's concentrated defending. And that was incredibly impressive. Because what I think we all thought would happen was, well, the home team are going to get tired. They can't possibly keep this up. And then they'll start making mistakes. It only needs a fractional mistimed challenge or just not quite being on it, and Liverpool will be through. They did not let up at all. And Klopp was right to point out that was incredibly impressive. That's the first team that Liverpool have faced this season. Because there's been a lot of matches, actually, where teams have stuck at it and been defensive. In fact, before the game, Klopp said he expected it to be like the Norwich game, where it was only 1-0. You know, you kind of think at some point it's exhausting trying to contain Liverpool, and you won't be able to do it for 90 plus whatever added time there is. But Atletico did it. They managed it. And Simeone afterwards was kind of surprised that they did, and all the local journalists were. This was them really powered by adrenaline and passion and believing in their system. That they probably will never play that well again.
I think Robertson actually showed that he was riled by it. I mean, he's someone who's not afraid of the odd little kind of niggling here or there. He's always got that kind of big white grin on his face when he's trying to wind people up. And the forearm to the head of Lionel Messi against Barcelona last season comes to mind as well.
Yeah.
Early doors have some of that. So it's fine to do it when you're, you know, he was annoyed. They'd played a whole game with so much of the ball, and it got under his skin.
Yeah, I mean, every team has it in them, obviously. I just wanted to ask you, though, Alison, what did you make of Jurgen Klopp's decision to take Sadio Mane off at halftime and the reasons that he gave?
There might actually have been a slight bit of deflection in that. He said it was because he felt he had a yellow card and he felt he was sure he'd get a second one because they were deliberately fainting when they were within 3 metres of him.
Sadio Mane never gone down easily in his life, has he? I mean,
but
top lad.
But I did feel, yes, of course, that's fine. That's management, isn't it? If you've got a player on a yellow and you think it's the sort of game where they're going to target a player on a yellow. But I also felt Mane didn't look fully fit and wasn't being fully effective. And it's easier for Klopp to say he's taking him off because of what the opposition might do rather than he wasn't having his best game.
Also, bog standard old 4-4-2 is not dead. It's not
it was
dead.
Great, wasn't it?
Two of four, narrow. You can't get through sometimes if you're organised enough.
So what about if Diego Simeone wasn't from Argentina, he was from England, he was called Doug Simon? Would we be...
Good name, Max.
Yeah, that is producer Max's take on it. Would we... I mean, to be fair, both yourself, Tom and Gregor, have been in favour of the tactics. But Alison, would we be criticising his tactics if he was English?
Well, yeah, he wouldn't. Yeah, you wouldn't get away with that amount of falling over. I mean, some of it. Well, I mean, you know, at one point, Mo Salah was laughing. He couldn't stop laughing at how ridiculous it become the rolling around. And it just does feel a bit 1992, doesn't it? And yeah, we would. But I don't think. I think we'd still like him to be here. He's hilarious. He's Jekyll and Hyde. He's on the touchline. He looks like somebody. I've got to have him round for dinner. I must come to my party. I've got to know that man. But when you're actually in a press conference with him, he's dour and almost unpleasant and doesn't really want to talk at all.
He's clearly just trying to get into your head, Alison.
It's like the lunchbox.
It's like the little lunchbox. He's trying to wind you up. But I would just be interested, Alison, in your take, having been there. Was it one of those games where it looked like they could have played another 90 minutes and Liverpool still wouldn't have scored?
Yes.
So do you have concerns for the second leg?
No. There's no way they can... No. It was a special occasion. And I'm absolutely... I did... Yeah. When you said... I think what somebody mentioned Liverpool lost. And I thought, oh, did they? Didn't feel like it. It feels to me like Liverpool will go through quite easily. No concerns whatsoever. And I don't mind you bringing that up next time.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's talk about the man of the moment right now, and that is Mr. Erling Haaland. The 19-year-old Norwegian's remarkable scoring form continued on Tuesday as his two goals, including an absolute screamer, gave Dortmund a 2-1 win over PSG in the first leg of their Champions League last 16 tie. Some of the stats to just remind you of, if you're not quite aware, of the Dortmund new striker, simply mind-blowing. 39 goals. 6 hat-tricks, 11 goals in 7 games for Borussia Dortmund, 10 goals in 7 Champions League matches. He's already reached double figures in the Champions League, which is and he's done it in 4 games faster than any other player in the competition's history. He's the only teenager to reach double figures in a single season in the Champions League, which is something that Mbappe, Ronaldo and even Messi couldn't manage. In fact, he scored more goals in the Champions League this season than the entire Barcelona team. And all of this, of course, for just €20 million when he joined Dortmund from Red Bull Salzburg last month. And that is despite interest from Manchester United and Juventus. So when you hear all those stats about him, is he, Gregor, the best young player in world football right now?
I think for players, you know, teenagers doing it on the biggest stage like that, the only guy who can compete with him was in his team, Jadon Sancho. But they're obviously such different players. If you'd ask me who's the most thrilling player, young player, then it's him all day, because he's something that's kind of almost never been seen before, in that you know, this might sound controversial, he's actually not that good technically.
He is.
I mean, compared to Sancho, compared to a Callum Hudson-Odoi, compared to the greatest players, who like all the best players, people you've put in the realm, the category of the best players in the world, Ronaldo, Messi, he's nowhere near them. But he's got everything else. He's got and he's, you know, obviously he's very good technically. He can bring people into play. He's got a hammer of a left foot. But it's his athleticism and his kind of mentality, his confidence. And his size and his sort of big lumbering strides.
It's like a bulldozer,
He's like a wrecking ball when he gets in full flight, and it's kind of your jaw slackens a little bit. And that's what I mean by it's something that really you haven't seen before. So he kind of propels himself up into that category of being one of the best players in the world, in world football. He'll be a very different type of best player in the world.
Well, Alison, you say he's technically gifted.
Well, I watched a showreel of his goals, which is great thing to do, and I thought, oh wow, how technically gifted he is. The way his first touch, he thinks ahead, it's clearly instinctive, you don't plan it, but his first touch plays it to where he wants to be able to go so that he can then go around the defender or just unleash an amazing shot.
There's times where it looks like he's not grown into his body. He's so off the cuff and so kind of, he looks out of control almost.
Yeah, but you see, that, I think we're looking at the same thing in a different way. I could see he was sort of almost gangly and yet managed not to be, which I was so impressed by. And that is good technical ability, surely.
I mean, of course he's good, but I just think, you know, my point is the kind of type of player, you see someone who's so nimble-footed and skillful, like a Jadon Sancho who does lollipops and spins past people, and, you know, he doesn't do that. He's all about power and strength and unpredictability.
I don't know whether they've played against each other yet, but I'd love to see him go up against De Ligt from Juventus, Matthias De Ligt, who was the kind of defensive version of this for me last season when I was watching the Champions League. Mm. I mean, it just, you know, don't want to use that cliche Rolls-Royce defender or whatever, because he was more than that. He had that kind of athleticism that Greg is talking about Erling Haaland having, a kind of giant of a man, you know, completely dominated Cristiano Ronaldo in their quarterfinal, I think it was. So I'd like to see those two go head-to-head. See if he can get past De Ligt, and then I'll decide whether he's the best in the world.
How does he compare then to some of our favourite European stars of yesteryear, Alison? Can we compare him to anybody?
No, not in terms of his size and just the whole all his attributes are slightly startling. But we do laud young players all the time. I mean, Pele was 17, you know. I mean, ever since then, it's been on and on and on. If you're a teenager and you play well and look like you're enjoying your football, I think that's the key. Because it's slightly counterintuitive to be that good and to have an influence in a dressing room if you are a teenager. But if you can look like you're enjoying it and rising above expectations and so on, then the media will latch on to you. I remember going to see Michael Owen playing, it was FA Cup fifth round, I think, against Sheffield Wednesday, and he was still a teenager, still not that, you know, he was on the cusp of being famous. And I wrote something about something about music and football was relevant, and I said they're going to be singing Mad About the Boy, because it was all about him being young and talented. It didn't matter that he was talented, what mattered was that he was young and talented. And I think we do always focus on someone who's young because we think that means they've got something natural. They haven't sort of learned it through a succession of great managers and great teammates. There's some innate talent there and we feel privileged to be watching it. But I was at the World Cup in Russia and everyone was going on in a similar fashion about Mbappe. Never seen anyone so fast. Never seen anyone so young and so comfortable on the world stage. This will keep on going. And I hope he just gets better and better. But it's not...
I think we do. We laud players more now as well, like in a social media age as well. Mm. But I saw somebody saying, imagine Michael Owen emerging now.
Wayne Rooney.
I was going to say Wayne Rooney because I played against him when he was 15 in the FA Youth Cup, and I was at Forest and he was at Everton. And you know, there was a lot of hype around him, and he had this kind of aura about him. It was like he had menace. There was a menace behind his sort of youthful exuberance. And he just wanted the ball. It was like he was playing in the park with his mates.
Did you go into that game knowing about him, though?
We knew about him, but, I mean, there was guys in our team who played for England age groups with him. But after the game, our manager, John Pemberton, said, he's the next Alan Shearer. And then a few months later, we saw him curl that free kick, that goal in against Everton. So we're like, well, the gaffer was right for once.
But that's to me, Erling Haaland is one of the good things about the Champions League, because he's kind of, you know, not, we're not invested in him because he doesn't play for Manchester City or Liverpool or anything like that. And I think that's what's nice. And, you know, it reminds me of watching the Champions League and some of the players that never played in England. I remember watching David Trezeguet play for Monaco against Manchester United and scored a goal at Old Trafford that was kind of a bit Haaland-esque. He kind of just took a touch out of his feet and smashed it straight into the top corner. And that's what's so brilliant about him. And I hope he never, ever comes to a Premier League side so that we can just enjoy him, you know, completely, you know, free from...
What are you trying to say? What would happen if he came to the Premier League?
Oh, we'd be talking about when throwing boots on the ground when he substituted and all that kind of stuff, you know. Let's just keep moaning about our own players and let's just enjoy Erling Haaland
from a distance.
So you
think, are you saying if we knew him better, we'd probably find things about him we didn't like?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You'd start kind of nitpicking at him, whereas there's just a pure joy in not necessarily following Dortmund all the time, sitting down to watch a game and going, my God, that guy's unbelievable.
You're talking about inverted snobbery slightly, aren't you?
I could be, yeah, I don't know. You tell me.
But there are people who, there are people as well who, you know, will only have seen him for the first time maybe in that Dortmund game. The piece I wrote online, yeah, there was somebody underneath commenting underneath saying, yeah, that's the first time I'd seen him live. Oh my God.
Yeah.
So it is kind of, people are still...
Yeah. Still learning about,
yeah,
him.
Absolutely. Still finding out all afresh and anew.
Yeah. So, do you know, one of my favourite bits about that game is after Hazard was taken off, just before they scored the first goal, Dortmund, the front three, if you like, Sancho, Haaland and Giovanni Reina, were born in London, Leeds and Sunderland. Isn't that nice?
There you go. They've been in England. They don't need to...
They don't need to come back. They've
done their time.
Okay. Now, we've managed to not upset Alison on this podcast by mentioning the dreaded three little letters of VAR. However, on Monday night, it was at its opinion-splitting best at Stamford Bridge when the Manchester United defender Harry Maguire escaped punishment for an outstretched leg into Mishi Batshuayi's groin. Ouch. Roy Keane believes VAR let Maguire off because of his personality, whilst Maguire came up with his own natural explanation for appearing to kick out a Batshuayi. This is what Maguire had to say on it. He says, I knew I caught him, but I felt like he was going to fall on me, and my natural reaction was to straighten my leg if he was to fall on me to hold him up. Obviously, I've got studs on my boots, and it probably looks worse than it does on TV, but it was my natural reaction. It wasn't a kick out. It wasn't any intent or anything like that. It was just my natural reaction to straighten my leg. And if he was going to fall on me just to hold him up, I knew I did catch him and I knew at the time, but I think it's the right decision in the end. I apologised to him, but it was nice that the referee saw sense. So, a natural reaction to straighten my leg into Batshuayi's groin is the excuse that Harry Maguire has given. Does anyone believe that?
He's got a career in politics waiting, hasn't he, Harry Maguire? I mean, he's talked his way around that beautifully.
I'm convinced.
You could see him hiding the smirk and everything,
yeah,
in that interview.
Absolute nonsense. He's definitely given him a little dig. So no, I don't believe him at all. But I admire him for trying.
Yeah. I mean, how many times do you want to say natural reaction?
Exactly.
He did very, very well. But yes, remarkably, he wasn't sent off. A lot of people comparing it to Heung-min Son, and he was sent off for his similar situation with Rudiger, wasn't it, in the Chelsea game. Does anyone believe it should have been a red?
Well, I don't believe you should backtrack to previous incidents. Then, I mean, no incident is the same at all.
No.
Just because one player gets sent off in a similar-ish situation, it does not mean... that's not how football's run, and I would hate it if people decided it should. We're back to the algorithm thing, where you take a human interpretation altogether and just feed an incident into a computer and compare it to 60,000 other incidents around the world and conclude it's most like that one, and that one led to a red card. I don't think.
I thought
you
said
that
we weren't going to upset Alison today.
No, wow.
So, do I sound cross? Sorry.
But those will argue about the consistency and how it's not consistent. If Son can be sent off for something that is very similar, I mean, it looked pretty identical to me.
No, it's not. It's not identical at all. It really it can't be identical.
Thrust the leg
it cannot
skywards
be, it cannot
at the player.
Be identical. It cannot be identical, and you have to brings us back to the only person really who, because none of us are believing Harry Maguire is telling the absolute truth. So you have to have an independent arbiter on the pitch. Oh, that's a referee, isn't it? And he's there watching the game in the manner in which it's being played, the pace, the amount of bile there is going on. He knows what the game is like, and if he decides on the balance of probability, the way the game was flowing, he doesn't feel it's a red. Unless something happens, this is how VAR is supposed to happen, isn't it? Unless VAR spots something, like Harry Maguire having a little pocket knife he pulls out of his shorts, and the referee didn't see it. If an argument is there, you go with the referee because he can see things that you cannot see on television, you cannot see on a monitor, and you cannot see if you're a biased fan, and you cannot see if you're a dishonest player. So just because Son got sent off for something similar, it does not automatically follow that Harry Maguire should have been sent off. There was enough element of doubt there for the referee's decision to stand.
You buying that, Gregor?
No, it's a red card.
I'd have sent him off as well, yeah.
So, Gregor, why then? Why should it have been a red card?
Because it doesn't stand up to scrutiny. I think the idea that Batshuayi falling on top of him would be some kind of grievous, wounding incident. That's lunacy. You can simply see his foot. You know, if he's wanted to hold him up with his leg, which is also no mean feat, then you'd hold your leg still. He thrust his leg towards him. I don't think it's a no-brainer, really. I understand it was off the pitch. It was kind of, the ball had gone away. It didn't really interfere with how play developed, anything like that. But it was violent conduct.
Mm. And Tom, you thought it was a red as well?
Yeah, I think so. You can see when you watch the whole incident, Maguire goes to clear the ball. Batshuayi kind of follows him, you know, into a challenge, catches him a little bit, which you could understand why he'd be a bit annoyed about that, sends him to the ground, and so Maguire kicks out. Red card.
Okay, well, ultimately, Harry Maguire did get away with it in the sense that there was no red card dished out to him in the game, but are we willing to admit to any excuses that we've used in the past and got away with?
In life or in football? Because it's a dangerous game.
A little bit of both.
That's
why
a
not?
Dangerous, dangerous game. I would just like to, you know, Harry Maguire, I think, learned a few tactics from a certain impressive manager, Jurgen Klopp, who's used the wind, the pitch being too dry, and snow for drawing games in previous seasons.
You're very anti-Klopp, aren't you?
I don't know what you're talking about. I think he's a great, great lad, by all accounts.
Great lad, yeah.
Good manager, good team. And I'm not sure I feel comfortable admitting to any of my excuses because it might get me in trouble. But one of my favourite excuses in football ever is Italy at the World Cup. Not at the World Cup, sorry, at the Euros in 2004. They drew 0-0 with Denmark, came off the pitch afterwards, and Francesco Totti blamed his boots and said, "They make my feet too hot." And just when all the reporters thought that was the most bizarre thing they'd heard, they then went and spoke to Christian Panucci, his teammate, who said, "Nah, mate, it's not the boots, it's the socks." And he said, "I had blisters on my heels at the end of the game. I'm just going to do an Italian accent. I'm not going to. The thread of these socks, the socks were made of, was too rough. And that's why I played badly." I mean, that's the most brilliantly Italian thing you've ever heard, isn't it? The thread count in my socks was not good enough.
Dear, dear, dear. Absolutely.
See, I can sympathise with that. I don't mean to, ruin your excuse here. But loads of players, the reason why they cut their socks off and wear those little white ones...
You've had sock woe before, have you?
Absolutely. The socks are often too thin when you're... So if they've got these big, thick ones, especially in the blazing heat of a World Cup, then maybe it was why he played bad.
That's rubbish. I've scored a goal with a broken wrist because if you want to, you can.
You've handball. You've cheated, is what you're saying.
No, I broke my wrist because I was in goal.
Oh, I thought you punched it in with a cast. I thought that's what
you
were
saying. No one really cared. So I trotted off to go to the hospital, and then the ball was at my feet, and I thought I might as well score on my way to the hospital, and did. So socks aren't going to bother me.
So you've technically been subbed off, is what you were saying. This is outrageous. I can't believe it, Alison. I thought you were an outstanding person of honour.
I don't moan. So no one knew I was going to hospital. I'll just quietly go to hospital.
Well, I'd like to think someone knew because your team would have been a player down. You just walked off.
Just trotted off. Back in a minute, lads.
Okay. But that,
I suppose what I'm saying in a roundabout way is that is an excuse and not a reason, isn't it? So it's a good example, Tom. Because
it's an excuse,
it is not a reason. No. Because this morning I played tennis and I got cramp in my toes. And I still won. I still won because I decided to ignore it.
Very
and that's
good.
Because Alison is just ultra competitive as
very
well.
Very good. Gregor, you must have had because of some good ones, surely.
I did a Ross McCormack once and I blamed my gate for missing the team bus.
You got locked in your
own
house.
I'd actually fallen asleep.
Oh, so it was a lie.
So they bought it in the sense that the bus didn't like roar off and leave. It waited around for, I rang and I said, it was my gate. When in fact I had like bedhead and I was driving down to the ground to meet the bus. I was still fined heavily for it. So,
you
remember Ross McCormack blaming his gate for Aston Villa and Steve Bruce.
Did you have one of them fancy gates?
It was an apartment block. I didn't have like a mansion though. So,
man of the people.
Yeah,
I mean, he's not telling you that he owned the whole block.
Yeah, exactly.
Gregor's career is one long list of misdemeanours, isn't it?
That's the beauty of this pod. That's what we're learning more and more. Stories.
Imagine the things he's not told us. It's always the broken washing machine for me.
Go on.
If I'm ever late for a pod, the washing machine. I'd wait for someone to fix.
I actually do have a broken washing machine, but I'm here.
I don't think, I've not even got a washing machine.
What?
Oh, yeah, no, I have. I have. I don't know what I'm talking about. I definitely have. I can't believe you've not talked about Gordon Strachan's one with Scotland.
What was
Gordon Strachan? I find that kind of creeps me out. Like.
Bit weird. About how you're all little. Gordon Strachan, when they failed to qualify for the 2018 World Cup, said that the height of his team said, genetically, we are behind. Maybe we can get big women and men together and see what we can do. You're not that short.
He also said that like Scottish players should all train on sand. Because it improves your core stability, like Brazilians. So you should go and play down on kind of Troon Beach in the howling wind and rain. Good idea, Gordon.
Well, that is it for now. Many thanks to our guests today, Alison Rudd and Tom Clark.
Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online or on your smartphone or tablet.
It is just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more information and we'll be back on Monday.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.